Good morning and welcome to Behind the Headlines, your live Friday morning roundup of Utah news from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW, heard across the state on Utah Public Radio. I'm Roger McDonough, and today on the show, Utah Governor Spencer Cox says that he's exploring the idea of paying residents to get vaccinated, or maybe even instituting a kind of vaccine lottery, we'll explain. Also, Cox is canceling the extra $300 COVID-related unemployment benefits in the state. Plus, how Utah restaurants and bars are responding to the lifting of public health orders and more on the docket today. And joining me for this conversation, we have got Salt Lake Tribune reporter Kathy Stevenson. Good morning, Kathy. Glad you're with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And reporter Taylor Stevens is with us as well. Welcome to you, Taylor.
Good morning.
And also on the Zoom, we've got Tribune news columnist Robert Gerke. Hello and welcome, Robert.
Hey, good morning, Roger.
Listeners, you can join this discussion with your questions and comments by calling 801-355-8255. That's 801-355-TALK. Or you can tweet to us. Our handle is at KCPW. Yesterday, the CDC updated its COVID-19 guidelines, and people who are fully vaccinated, meaning those who are 2 weeks past their final vaccine dose, are now at greater liberty to take their masks off. And the premise there is that you're taking your mask off next to someone who is also fully vaccinated. About a third of Utah's population is now in that category, fully vaccinated, according to the Utah Department of Health. But vaccine demand has been slowing. And so Taylor Stevens, Utah's governor, is considering some novel ideas to try and ramp that demand back up. Tell us what he's talking about.
Yeah, so we saw something similar happen in Ohio this week. The governor there announced that he was implementing a lottery for entering everyone who had been vaccinated into a drawing where they could be eligible to win $1 million from the state. And they'll be doing that for 5 weeks. And so at his news conference yesterday, Governor Spencer Cox said that's something that he has already been looking into in Utah, and that he's really excited about that idea and really interested in it, and is currently exploring ways to make that happen with the state legislature, which of course would need to appropriate the funds.
This is Utah, Taylor. There's no lottery here. There's, you know, no legal Texas Hold'em games, no gambling allowed. What the governor, you know, is suggesting here, I guess, would that run against Utah code, against Utah law?
He was very, made a point of saying this would not be a lottery. He also said he thinks lotteries are taxes for people who are bad at math. But he says, you know, that wouldn't be the case here, that this would, people wouldn't have to enter money. They wouldn't have to do anything other than get vaccinated. And so he says in that way, it would not be a lottery because they're not paying into it.
And also, I mean, Taylor, I myself am already fully vaccinated. Do I miss out on my chance at the $1 million or whatever, having already done the thing that the governor wants me to do without any extra incentive? Can you talk about that?
No. So the governor says that anyone who has been vaccinated would be entered into this, not just people after the fact. And, you know, I will just stress that this is early. You know, the governor hasn't announced that we are doing something like this,
right?
But he said he's really interested in looking at ways to incentivize people's behavior. And he said, I thought this was interesting, that there's no amount of money that is too much to help us get an extra 5% or 10% of people vaccinated. He says, when you look at, you know, the impact that COVID-19 has had on the economy. And so, obviously this could have some kind of impact, he thinks, in helping those people, particularly who are on the fence about getting vaccinated.
Yeah.
Maybe not those people who are really strongly against the vaccine, but perhaps some of those people who are considering getting vaccinated, they just haven't made the time, or they haven't fully decided whether it's something they want to do. Those are the people he thinks could be swayed by something like this.
And the lottery, just to verify, I mean, that's just one of the options. Potentially direct payments for vaccination, is that another idea? And I guess, where would that money come from? How would that decision get made?
Yeah, the governor didn't float that specifically, but there have been a lot of ideas going around in the last few days. A lot of states are looking at ways to incentivize people to get the vaccine. So there are some programs where people are getting shots, you know, actual shots of liquor or free beer. Other states are giving out, you know, free hunting licenses, free fishing licenses. There's a lot of different ways to do it. The direct payment thing is something I've seen a few state lawmakers talking about on Twitter, but you know, it's far from a really solid proposal. And it's also, you know, this is still in the early phases, so it's not totally clear where this money would come from. However, the state is receiving more than $1.5 billion in federal coronavirus stimulus money.
Yeah.
And it's possible that at least some of the funding could come from, you know, that big bucket that they have and will decide how to spend in the coming months.
I think I'm going to play a quote from the governor. This is from yesterday's COVID presser by Governor Spencer Cox. And this is after he talked about, you know, those potential incentives. And he was wrapping up his comments. Here, take a quick listen.
But I hope that people won't need some sort of outside motivation, that they'll do it because it protects them, it protects their families, it protects their neighbors, protects our economy. It's safe, and it's the thing that we've been waiting for. So please, please, please don't wait.
And the plea there is to people's sense of, you know, ethics and humanity and doing the right thing in the name of public health and everyone else. But I'm wondering, this might be a point to bring in news columnist Robert Gierke. Robert, you know, some people, I guess, aren't motivated by that. And so we turn to a kind of idea of a lottery. Is that going to work better than a plea from the governor?
Yeah, it does feel a little weird at this point that we're bribing people essentially to do something that I think most of us recognize is the right thing to do. But there are people who are still on the fence, obviously. Our as you noted, our rate of vaccination has slowed considerably. And there's got to be something to, you know, we got to try something else to motivate people. So they're taking the shots to the people where they are instead of making them come to clinics and so forth. They're trying to get them into doctors' hands so that they can, you know, so people can talk to their doctors about it. And maybe that'll be comforting to them and, you know, get them off the fence. But yeah, I mean, it does appear that at some point there's going to have to be some sort of incentivizing, and there's, you know, there's a couple novel ideas out there. I think this lottery one is one that could actually have some benefit.
Robert, I'm assuming that's your dog in the background there, but I've got a question for you. Are Utah lawmakers likely to go for this, you know, not a lottery idea that the governor says that he's interested in, because they would have to sign off on it, right?
Yeah, they would have to sign off on it. I mean, in the grander scheme of things, as Taylor mentioned, there's $1.5 billion that they have to spend. And so, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 million is a pretty small piece of that. And, you know, it's not technically a lottery, I guess, in the sense that you don't have to enter, you don't have to pay, buy a ticket, whatnot. So I guess it's possible. I'm not sure that they'd be keen on just giving away money, but at the same time, you know, we're going to bog down here even more, I think, in the coming weeks after we get this 12 to 15 group vaccinated. And so there's going to have to be something to get us to a threshold where we're getting at least approaching herd immunity. So, yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see how they react. I think there's obviously going to be some who are against it and some who are for it. And I don't know if there's going to be a majority in leadership who goes for it, but it's going to be one that's going to be fun to watch, at least for the next few days.
Sure. And Taylor Stevens, just there's a special session that's coming up now. Is the purpose of that special session? Well, obviously, it's not to decide whether or not Utah has a lottery. It's about allocating this COVID relief money, or at least that's part of the reason for the special session. Can you give us sort of a quick preview of what is happening at the session and when it's happening?
Yeah, so the special session hasn't been called quite yet, but we are anticipating that it's going to be a one-day session on Wednesday next week. And the legislature needs to meet to accept the federal funding, but it actually seems pretty unlikely that they're going to make many decisions about how to allocate it. I believe they have 3 years to spend all of the money, and so this is sort of a starting point. And I've heard that there may be some moves to set aside money for big projects. For example, affordable housing, you know, may be a bucket that they set aside some funds for, but they're really worried about inflation and pumping too much money into the economy right now. And so they do kind of want to hold off on some of this spending for at least a couple months is what we're currently hearing from lawmakers ahead of that session.
Okay. There's more to get to here on the COVID front. And so I'd like to, we'll obviously you'll be following what happens in that special session. But I want to turn, Taylor, you wrote earlier this week about the governor's promise having to do with masks in schools, that masks would be gone by the start of school in the fall. And I'm wondering how the new CDC guidance plays into this. But what did the governor say about masks and schools earlier this week?
Yeah, so the governor held a town hall earlier this week, virtual town hall, and he, you know, made a promise that there will be no masks in the fall. This has really become a flashpoint among a lot of, people on the more conservative end of the political spectrum, I would say, who are really opposed to, you know, they were opposed to mask mandates and now have been very opposed to the ongoing mask mandate in Utah schools. And there was a requirement that the mask mandate in Utah schools stay in effect until June 15th, or the last day of the school year, whichever comes first. And of course, the governor said yesterday that schools will be allowed to, let students take off their masks for the last week of school. But, you know, the governor has sort of made the proclamation that we'll be done with masks in the fall. And this announcement comes sort of on the heels of a lot of high-profile anti-mask protests that have been staged by teachers. A group of them recently made a lot of news and even national news when they went to a Granite school board meeting.
Yeah.
And they were demanding that the school board terminate the state's mask mandate, which of course it could not do because that is a state rule. And so they actually kind of forced an early end to that meeting. And I believe there were, looking into charges for several of the people who were at that meeting. And so, this has been a real kind of flashpoint between a lot of different folks and, talking to the school district. The Utah Education Association, the president of the UEA, Heidi Matthews, said that, even educators are divided about this, that some really want to see masks continue and are worried about the impact that this might have on teachers or students in the fall. Other teachers really are celebrating this and students as well and are happy to, throw away their masks, so to speak. So really divided feelings about that proclamation, I think.
We're going to have to head to a break here pretty shortly, but let's Robert Gerke, news columnist and, opinion columnist, schools and masks. I guess, what do you think about the governor? I mean, this is a change of tune for the governor who previously, kept the mask requirement for schools after the mandate had more generally, or other public health measures had more generally ended in Utah following, that COVID endgame bill. But now masks are going to go away. Is it time? Is it going to be time in the fall? I don't know. What do you think about this?
I mean, it's hard to know where we're going to be in the fall. I would hope that we don't need masks in the fall. But this is just kind of baffling to me because, as you know, he had been a defender of the masks in school policy and for reasons that, we want kids to be able to stay in school, and especially kids who haven't been vaccinated. Right now, we've got less than 5% of school-age kids who've been vaccinated just because, again, only 16 and 17-year-olds are eligible. But, so these kids are unvaccinated. We've had this mask policy in place for so long that it seems premature to discontinue it a week before before school ends. And, kids right now we've seen cases among adults, the adult population decline because of the vaccines again. But cases among the school age population are still pretty high. I mean, 80 plus people, between 80 and 85 students are getting infected every day, according to the data for the last several weeks. It was up around 100 a few weeks ago. So, you know, this just feels premature. It doesn't seem to benefit anything. And also, I think it's worth noting that most of the school districts who were most adamantly opposed to the mask policies had already decided they're going to ignore the state mandate. And so whereas, you know, Taylor mentioned the Granite District had said they were going to continue the mask mandate to the end of the year. But then last night, after the governor's announcement, they sent a note to parents saying, we're discontinuing it, you know, per the governor's directive. And so, you know, this does have a practical impact on those districts that were still going to be masked up. Hmm. And it's highly likely that it will lead to more infections than we otherwise would have if we kept the masks in place.
Okay. Robert Gerke, news columnist with the Salt Lake Tribune. Taylor Stevens, anything to add before we head to our first break in the show here? Or have we covered this pretty well?
Yeah, I think, I think one thing that is in the conversation is what will happen with the variants, and is it really feasible to make this kind of declaration before we hit the fall and really know what the next few months are going to look like, even as we're seeing the CDC relaxing guidelines. And so that will be something that's interesting to watch, is how the next few months play out. And obviously, we're all hoping that we really are on the right track, and we'll see what happens.
That's Taylor Stevens. She is a government reporter with the Salt Lake Tribune. And we're going to take our first break in the show. You're listening to Behind the Headlines here on KCPW and Utah Public Radio, featuring reporting from the pages of the Salt Lake Tribune. When we come back, we will turn to how restaurants and bars are navigating the world of decreased public health restrictions and to the end of certain COVID-related unemployment benefits. You're listening again to Behind the Headlines. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough, and I'm joined by Salt Lake Tribune reporters Kathy Stevenson, Taylor Stevens, and news columnist Robert Gerke. It is our live Friday morning Utah News Review, and you can join us with your questions and comments by calling 801-355-8255. I'm getting my numbers confused. 801-355-TALK, or you can tweet to @KCPW. We have been talking about the changing public health restrictions on COVID. And Kathy Stevenson, you write this week about dining and alcohol for the Salt Lake Tribune. And this week, you covered the way that various establishments are thinking about those changes. One central question is to mask or not to mask. And then another aspect of this, I have a clip that I want to play. And Kathy, I'll come back to you afterwards. This is from the movie Casablanca. Take a listen.
Look, Rick. You know what this is? Something that even you have never seen. Letters of transit signed by General Vigon. Cannot be rescinded, not even questioned.
I couldn't help myself. That's Peter Lorre playing the character Ugatti, talking about letters of transit. And Kathy, the reason I played that is because the new letters of transit, at least in one Utah restaurant, is proof of vaccination. Can you talk about that, Kathy?
The state lifted all the mask mandates, so private businesses can decide how they want how to operate now. And obviously, restaurants and bars are part of that. And the Bayou decided, we are going to require our patrons to show their vaccination cards. The owner, Mark Alston, said, he was following CDC guidelines that said, if you're vaccinated, you can be in a room with other vaccinated people without masks, without social distancing. And he feels like his bar, that's what he wants for his bar. So when he announced that, obviously it was very controversial. He got some hate mail, some, strict comments on Facebook and social media. And when he opened, though, there were lots of people who said, great, I'm going to go. So
there's Yeah, there's, you know, I'm going to bring in Robert Gierke because he wrote about this in a column as well, news column. It's Robert Gierke. You wrote about this you know, about the Bayou requiring people to be vaccinated to come and dine in their establishment to show that they are vaccinated. And Mark Alston with the Bayou, he described this kind of mask dance that is done at restaurants where you wear a mask as you go in, but then, you know, sitting down and taking it off as you sit and eat near a bunch of other people. And he called that a kind of theater. And it is kind of a theater, isn't it, Robert?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree with him on this. I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to, you know, you walk 30 paces through a restaurant with a mask on and then take it off for an hour and a half and everybody is, you know, going about their normal business. It's I mean, I think he's got a pretty valid point. If the masks aren't actually, you know, doing all that much, the safest way you can operate in his mind, and I think he's right about this, is limit your clientele to people who've been vaccinated. And as the CDC said yesterday, people who are vaccinated they don't have to distance, they don't have to wear masks in places where other people are vaccinated. And so I think he's right on this. The outrage that he's been the recipient of is something else. I mean, he gave me some calls that he recorded from people who said he was a part of a pedophile beer cult. He said it was, you know, these people are comparing him to Nazis. They were hoping he and his family are killed. It's pretty egregious. But he's sticking to his guns, and he makes clear, like, look, businesses can do what they want. And that's what a lot of these anti-mask people have been arguing for since day one, is that businesses should be able to do what they want. And so this is what he wants to do. And, you know, he recognizes it may cost him some business, but I think on the whole, as Kathy noted, the turnout, the support has been pretty off the charts, to the point where he was telling people not to come in on the opening night, you know, when they reopened Wednesday. So, it's a interesting thing that's going to play out over and over in restaurants all across the valley. I mean, I was told there was another restaurant down in Draper where 80% of the people don't wear masks, and you know, the servers who are vaccinated aren't wearing masks, and that's fine. That's how they choose to do their business, I guess. And so, it's gonna be different strokes for different folks.
Kathy Stevenson, I sort of skipped over something that Robert Gierke brought up, which is the masking part of your coverage. And again, there are various ways to approach this. You require masks or you don't, or you let customers decide. You popped into some places, places that were taking these different tacks. Maybe can you give us some examples of those differing strategies or how people are approaching this?
Yeah, I mean, the Bayou's there on State Street, and a few blocks away at Cheers to You downtown. Bob's owner said, nope, we're back to normal. You know, nobody has to wear masks. We put the tables together. People can walk around and socialize. He's been wanting that, you know, for months. He felt like the restrictions ruined his business. You know, that's his clientele, right? I think every business is deciding what do my customers, you know, want and feel safe. So Public Coffee is finally going to open on June 1st. And Missy Grice, the owner, said, you know, we are going to keep the masks when you walk up to the counter and order and before you sit down. So, it's just what do my customers want? Other restaurants have put a sign up saying masks not required, but welcome, right? So it kind of, if you feel comfortable wearing a mask and want to do that, you know, you shouldn't be chastised for doing that. So, I mean, it's kind of the same thing that's been going on for, you know, a year, right? Some people want the mask, some people don't. And so you just have to find the businesses that fit your personality.
And Kathy, one way that you can do that is there's a site where people are tracking which restaurants, you know, are and are not requiring masks. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, there is a map. It's, you know, crowdsourced, so I'm not going to say it's all accurate.
Okay.
There seems to be more like it has been the whole time. More businesses that are not requiring masks, more in the suburbs, more in rural Utah, where people are more conservative and, you know, are not as worried, and maybe where the numbers have not been as high, right? So I think that's part of it. Salt Lake City didn't seem to have a lot of businesses that were going mask-free. So Cheers to You is unique, I think. But yeah, so it's a map you could go to and plug in. If you go to a business and it's and you notice that they don't require masks, you can put in the information. So it is crowdsourced. So
yeah, and I'll say it's the maskmap.com. I'm wondering about the overlap of places where people are more likely to take the masks off, and if that coincides with the places where people are less likely to be vaccinated, and this is all about being protected, you know, that's what scientists say the vaccines are doing, and to date they are working pretty well against the variants of the virus as well. But mm-hmm. of course, it requires getting as many people as vaccinated as is possible. Yeah, maybe I'm going to bring Robert Gerke, the news columnist, back in on this. Yeah. Robert, how do you navigate that when you don't know whether or not a person next to you in the restaurant has, you know, had their vaccines?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big question about the CDC guidance is, you know, they do say that you can be in places without distancing and without masks if you've been vaccinated. But outside of doing what the Bayou is doing and making people show their card, I don't think there's any way for places to know who's vaccinated and who's not. I mean, at this point, you know, there are lots of appointments. So if people aren't vaccinated, they're kind of on their own, I think, to a large degree. You know, earlier on, I know business owners I talked to were a little concerned about their staff because their staff are young people typically, and they hadn't had an opportunity to be vaccinated. Now I think we've kind of crossed that bridge and we're kind of just trying to navigate this on a case-by-case basis. I think there are places that are going to be a lot more permissive, Cheers to You, for example. And if people aren't comfortable with that, there are places like the Bayou that they can go where it's a lot more restrictive and a lot more locked down, I guess, it's safer. So yeah, it's going to be, we're going to, it's generally speaking, this is what we're going to be dealing with for the next several months, I think, all across the board. And we talked about schools, for example. You know, what are people going to be comfortable with at school? What are they going to be comfortable with when they're dining out or at a bar or going to a movie theater, going to a Bees game or a Jazz game? You know, it's going to be case by case, people judging how much risk they're willing to take and assessing that for themselves.
There's this sort of social aspect of it, too, that you know, we have been in lockdown for quite a while. And now as things begin to move towards that opening up, and I think many of us are confused about how to behave. You know, it's just a sort of unique situation that we're in, obviously, having lived and still living through a pandemic. Go ahead, Robert.
No, I was agreeing with you. Absolutely. Okay. 100% correct.
Yeah. I'll remind listeners that you can join this conversation by tweeting to @KCPW or calling 801-355-8255. That's 801-355-TALK. There's more COVID, a little bit more COVID coverage to get to. And so I think we're going to move on, Kathy, from unless I'm missing something from the story, Kathy, the bars and restaurant story that you covered this week.
No, only that I would say, I think bars where maybe younger people gather are going more without the masks. Bars where maybe older people go are, you know, being more conservative. So I think it just depends on your age and where you live.
Got it. Thank you. Kathy Stevenson covers food, dining, and alcohol for the Salt Lake Tribune. And thanks for your coverage on this. And as I said, there's more COVID coverage to get to. And we're talking about restaurants and bars here. This is an industry that was hit very hard by the pandemic. Many people from the sector went on unemployment because, you know, the place where they worked shut down in the name of public health. Utah's governor this week, though, or maybe it was a little bit before this week, I can't remember, he says that those who are on unemployment have kind of, I don't want to say overstayed their welcome, but something along those lines. And Taylor Stevens, the governor, made a decision this week that that had been made before him by some other Republican governors around the country. What is that decision? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the governor announced this week that the state would step back from the unemployment benefits that the federal government has been providing, sort of this boost on top of the unemployment of $300 a week. And he says that that was added to the state unemployment benefits to help people get through the pandemic and get the economy back. And he says, you know, that was appropriate during the hardest times of the pandemic, but now he says Utah's economy is back and it's strong, and that it's time to step away from those federal benefits in an effort to get people back to work.
And federal benefits, meaning that this is federal funding. Utah is not paying that extra $300 that people on unemployment are getting during COVID.
Yeah, that's right. And so that unemployment boost will continue to be offered until September in states that choose to continue their participation. But as you alluded to, at least nine other Republican-led states have in the last few days announced that they were going to also halt their participation in this. And so it is a trend that we're seeing of sort of backing away from these extra benefits. And one of the rationales for that is people say that it's disincentivizing people, from going to work, that they're making more money on unemployment that they could make otherwise. I spoke with several people who were receiving the unemployment benefits, and one person said they are making more than they were at their job, but he said that hasn't disincentivized him from seeking work. Under state unemployment law, you do have to prove that you're seeking employment. And if you deny an offer, then you're no longer eligible for the unemployment payments. And so he said he's been looking and just has had a hard time finding something. But he said that the $300 a month boost has really been a lifeline for him during the pandemic, and he hopes he won't really need it when this ends. It will still keep going in Utah until June 26th, but he says, you know, this has really saved him and his family, you know, during the pandemic, and you know, he's really upset to see that go away because there are, you know, people who are still struggling in the economy. Even as many people are back to work, there are some industries that have been hit hard and people who are still struggling.
Taylor, how many people are we talking about in Utah receiving this extra $300? And then I guess I'm wondering if we know, or if there's data showing a direct tie between these payments and then certain industries not being able to hire. Because on the other side of this, as I think you mentioned, is employers who say that they can't find workers. But is that actually tied to this benefit? I mean, is there data pointing to that?
Yeah, so your first question, how many Utahns are receiving this? 28,000, according to the Department of Workforce Services. And so as to your second question, it's difficult to say. However, I did ask the state, you know, was this a decision that was made because this is suppressing the workforce in some way? And they said, no, that's not the reason that they made this decision, that it just felt like the right time with the way that Utah's economy is going. And so that wasn't a basis on which they made this decision. And they said that there's no evidence that people are en masse, you know, rejecting job offers because they're making more or making enough money on unemployment. And so there's really no evidence of that. However, as you mentioned, there are businesses who are sort of tying these two things together. You know, we were just talking about the restaurant industry, and the restaurant industry has really been struggling to find employees as they reopen. I did some reporting a little while back about, you know, how many service workers are really facing challenges during the pandemic, being yelled at by people who support masks, who don't support masks. So whether that could have something to do with it, who knows? Another industry that is struggling is the construction industry. And they say that you know, they're not able to get people back to work. But, you know, there is a really low unemployment rate in Utah. I believe we're at a 2.9% unemployment rate, which is pretty much unchanged from when we entered the pandemic with a 2.7% unemployment rate. So there's just not a ton of people who are out there applying for jobs, which could also, you know, lead to some of the challenges in finding work. But I mentioned that there were 28,000 people who are on, you know, who are receiving these benefits. And I believe there's something like 50,000 jobs available on the Department of Workforce Services job board. So they're really encouraging people, you know, even if you have a job that your industry has been really struggling right now, widen your search and try and find one of these other 50,000 jobs, because, you know, they say there are jobs available and, you know, these 28,000 people could find them.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting. I mean, the pandemic, of course, sunk a number of businesses and yeah, right. A change of careers, though, is sort of what the state, I guess, is suggesting there. Just quickly, Taylor, I can't remember if you said this, but this benefit ends here in Utah. You said around the country it'll end in September, but here in Utah it's going to end not this month, but next, right?
Yeah, end of next month, end of June 26th. And so that's not to say, and we don't want to confuse anybody, that unemployment benefits are ending in Utah. They still are very much active. However, they will return to their pre-pandemic levels for people who are eligible. And so it's just this boost that is going away.
Robert Gierke, I am going to invite you into this conversation, an opinion columnist, news columnist with the Tribune. As I said, you know, there's that change, the pandemic changed everything, and the idea was to help people weather that with this extra payment. And now it's going away. Do you care to opine?
You know, I don't have too much of a problem with this, to be honest, because as Taylor mentioned, there's 7 weeks, for A, for the economy to recover, and B, for people to adjust accordingly. I, you know, it's not like it's a shock to the system and they're being cut off immediately, and the regular unemployment benefits are going to continue to be there. As she noted, our job market is you know, our unemployment rate is very, very low right now. And so there are jobs available for people who are, you know, who are looking. I kind of wish there maybe could have been a little bit more targeted, surgical, you know, extension for some of the people who really are in unique circumstances and otherwise, you know, and might not be able to find work. But, you know, at some point, as we talked about throughout this show, as we emerge from this pandemic, we're going to have to navigate the new normal. And I think this is a step toward returning us to pre-pandemic norms.
That's interesting. I'm just going to quickly, speaking of I mean, the pandemic, we're going to shortly go to a break and then come back and turn away from stories about the pandemic. But there's a comment that we got on Twitter and who says, this is Achorus Amorphous on Twitter, who says, I just took the Amtrak across the country and their rule makes more sense regarding masks, as they repeatedly say, only lift off your mask when you're taking a bite to eat or drink, and then close the mask as soon as your mouth has taken in the nutrient. And that's an interesting way of doing it. I guess that goes back to Kathy Stevenson's, you know, the conversation we had with her about, well, and with Robert Gierke about the theater of masking in restaurants. Maybe that's another tactic that some restaurants and bars could take. With that, Taylor Stevens, I will say thank you for your coverage on this. Robert Gierke, thank you for weighing in on that. And we're going to head to our next break in the show. When we come back, a couple more items from this past week in Utah news. You're listening to Behind the Headlines here on KCPW and Utah Public Radio, featuring reporting from the pages of the Salt Lake Tribune. Stay with us. Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough, and I am joined by the Salt Lake Tribune's Kathy Stevenson, Taylor Stevens, and Robert Gierke. This is our Friday morning local news roundup. You can join us with your questions and comments by tweeting to us. Our handle is at KCPW, or you can call 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. And Taylor Stevens, we'll stick with your reporting, government reporter with the Salt Lake Tribune. According to a number of Republican officials, the policies of of the Biden administration are driving more migrants to the U.S.-Mexico border, and that is resulting in what these officials say is a crisis. Some Utah elected officials are pointing the finger at the president. Tell us what they're saying.
Yeah, so this declaration was made in a letter that, as you mentioned, 19 Republican governors sent to President Joe Biden's administration. And they are blaming, quote, entirely the federal policy reversals executed within Biden's first 100 days in office on this border crisis that we are seeing. And of course, many people who are familiar with the situation on the ground say that it's much more complicated than that.
Yeah, I'm wondering, there's a few things that I wonder about in this story. Maybe at the forefront of my mind is the simple fact that Joe Biden is not Donald Trump and is the president of the United States. Is that to some extent driving increased immigration? And I don't know if that's a question you can answer, Taylor.
Yeah, I don't know that I know the answer to that. I mean, I can say that that's certainly one of the arguments that these Republican governors are making. They say that his rhetoric has been more welcoming than Trump's and is leading. You know, we do know there has been a surge of migrants at the border. We can say that. But, you know, one of the things that a lot of folks who are familiar with the immigration situation have pointed to is the, you know, these back-to-back hurricanes that slammed Central America last year. Those storms were really devastating to food crops. They displaced a lot of people. And the New York Times has reported that citizens from those nations are making up most of the migrants who are now trying to enter the United States. And so, you know, that's one potential. I mean, one thing we know about immigration, I think we all kind of understand that this is a really complicated issue that is spurred by, in this case, potentially natural disasters, spurred by climate change, by policies both in the United States and beyond, spurred by violence. You know, there's not one easy answer, I think. And that's one thing that's interesting about this letter is that it does, again, entirely blame this increase in migrants at the border on President Biden.
Yeah, and Customs and Borders Protection officials, I think you just said this, in announcing, you know, that there were a high number of border crossings, said that that increase had been happening for a while, and they blamed it on violence, natural disasters, food insecurity, poverty in other countries. I know that it's not just, the governor of Utah signed onto this letter, right? But there's also a number of other Republican officials who have opined on this. And maybe I'll bring in the news columnist, Robert Gerke. Senator Mike Lee has, Senator Mitt Romney has now as well said that this is a crisis and that it's Biden's fault. How do you reply to that as an opinion columnist?
I mean, for decades, immigration has been a political cudgel that both parties have used to beat the other with. And so I think that's kind of what this is. I mean, I would prefer to see them propose solutions to the problem. But, you know, they've been in office for quite a while, some of these individuals like Mike Lee, and they don't propose solutions. They don't actually seem to have any idea how to solve the problem. They just want to score political points. And so, you know, I mean, you can blame Biden, you can, you know, for the surge, that's fine. I think the question that needs to be asked is, well, what do you propose we do about it? You're a policymaker, you're elected to that position for a reason. So let's put your money where your mouth is and get to work solving the problem. But if they solve the problem, then they can't use it to score political points. So you see there's a dilemma for them.
And there's also, I mean, the surge of migrants is, of course, a surge in human beings, not you know, a wave of I don't know, whatever, yeah. You know, of something terrible, I guess. I don't know how to, you know, we have a border, but there's also humanitarian questions at play, and I don't know how to answer that. Yeah. We are running kind of low on time here, but Taylor Stevens, Gerke, do you want to comment on that before we jump forward?
No, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I think we lose sight of the human tragedy of it sometimes, the difficulty that it's inflicting on families and children and other people. And you know, it seems like it's a problem we're going to have to come to some solution on, or else we're going to continue to perpetuate the suffering.
Taylor Stevens, anything you want to add from the story before we turn to our final segment, the underplayed stories of the week?
Yeah, I just do want to say, you know, it is true that Biden has reversed several Trump era policies. And so I don't want to go without acknowledging that. And whether that's a factor here, I can't say. The other thing I want to mention is that this letter, it does not specify what steps these Republican governors would like to see Biden take. And so this is really a letter without any solutions offered. And that feels like an important thing to mention as well.
All right. That's Taylor Stevens, who is a government reporter with the Salt Lake Tribune. And you're listening to Behind the Headlines here on KCPW. Robert Gierke, let's go to Kathy Stevenson and bring her back into the conversation, because we are now at the final part of the show where we address our underplayed stories of the week. And Kathy, do you have a story? I think I'm springing this on you, but do you have a story that you want to highlight?
Oh, no.
Okay, great.
I know that I will be asked this, okay. So I plan ahead.
I'm glad to know. What's your pick for underplayed story?
I've just been intrigued by, it's kind of been an ongoing story, the hideout town and the development there and Summit County. And, I'm just intrigued by the whole thing. It sounds like it should be an episode on a Western or something. So yes, the hideout town.
This is the proposed annexation of a certain part of Summit County.
Summit County into Wasatch County, yes.
Check that out at sltrib.com. That is an article the most recent article is by Leah Larson on that.
Leah Larson, yes.
And so thanks for that pick. Taylor Stevens, let's go to you. What's your pick for underplayed story of the week?
Yeah, a story published on our website this morning about a BYU professor who called a gay student there a Book of Mormon term associated with Antichrist. Sounds like the school hasn't reacted publicly yet, but some LGBTQ students are really concerned about this and are, you know, asking for action. So kind of interesting story, worth a read about some of the dynamics at BYU.
Well, I had not heard that story. I'm just looking at the homepage right now. This is a story by Courtney Tanner. Listeners, you can find it right now front and center at sltrib.com. Thanks for your pick, Taylor Stevens. Robert Gierke, to you.
Well, Kathy stole mine, so I'll go with another of Leah's stories. The Salt Lake City Council the other night picked a new replacement. Dennis Ferris is going to be replacing Andrew Johnston for the West Side District. Andrew was chosen by the mayor to head up her homeless coordination. Dennis Ferris, he's been a longtime activist in the community and will be taking that seat on the city council.
Sorry, just quickly, Robert, says we have a little bit of extra time. I don't know if you can answer this or not, but decisions about replacing the city council chose Ferris to replace Johnston. Is he how long is the term that he's filling?
Yeah, so he fills out the term. It's when there's a vacancy, the council interviews applicants and chooses the replacement. He'll serve until January 3rd, 2022. So there'll be an election later this year for a permanent replacement of that seat. So he's just filling out Johnston's term. Then voters will get a say in the next municipal election.
Okay. Robert Gierke's pick for underplayed story of the week, new city council member on the Salt Lake City Council. I guess I will go with something obvious since we're in pledge drive season here at KCPW, which is that it is our spring pledge drive, and listener support is how this public radio, this nonprofit public radio outlet operates. It's also how nonprofit news outlets like the Salt Lake Tribune operates. And so, I would personally encourage you to subscribe to the Tribune, and then please do make your contributions to KCPW by calling us at 801-359-5279 or going to kcpw.org and clicking Pledge Now. Your support allows partnerships like this great partnership between the Tribune and KCPW to happen and for this program, Behind the Headlines, to air every Friday morning. And it's a live Utah News Review. Thank you to Kathy Stevenson, Taylor Stevens, and Robert Gierke, all with that newspaper, for joining me today. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
Roger.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And again, that is our show for today. Behind the Headlines is a co-production of KCPW and the Salt Lake Tribune. You can find podcasts at kcpw.org. Find all of the reporting that we've been discussing over at sltrib.com. I'm Roger McDonough. Have a great weekend and join us again next week.